VentureCast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That's a great story. I have a good Toads Play story too. I played there with Rich Price and opened for Ziggy Marley. And Ziggy Marley's enormous bodyguard came up to Rich and said, only three rules tonight, and then you'll have a great set. Rule number one, don't talk to Ziggy. Rule number two, don't talk to Ziggy. Can you guess rule number three? Rich is like, I got it. So it was a real friendly vibe. We had a good old time.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Fellas, how are you on this fine Wednesday evening?
Woo!
Woo! Knoxville, Tennessee. Ben, you're cranking along.
Ready to do it, yep.
Excellent. Jeff Simons in Berkeley, are you excited for 1993?
I am excited for 1993. I was not excited by my experience today in 2020, so I am looking to this to bring some joy to the world.
Let's go back in time. First things first, we're on the Music City Drive-In Podcast Network. That's the website where you can get all sorts of great articles and podcasts on so many different things. We are 50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys. And we make mistakes. So we have to start off with a correction from the 1992 podcast. Jeff Simons, last week you were asked, which do you think had a bigger effect on George Bush's loss? Did you think it was Ross Perot? Or did you think it was the Black Hawk Down incident in Somalia, the Battle of Mogadishu? You said Ross Perot.
And I apparently was very wrong.
You, sir, were correct because Black Hawk Down occurs this year in 1993.
How about that?
No wonder that didn't occur to you. Mark Bruffel is our diplomatic correspondent on the podcast. My good friend Bruffel pointed out that mistake. Our bad.
Well, you guys are so fast and loose with the years with your picks that we just get generally confused. That's probably what happened.
And also, Tim, it's not our bad, man. Let's just clarify.
It's not our
bad. There's plenty of things that are, in fact, my bad or our bad. That's not on the list.
Was this mine? Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
What's this yours? You're the history man.
No, but I also like it. You're like, our bad. Things happen.
Yeah.
Mistakes are made.
And really, if you're tuning into us and depending on us for our facts, I have bad news. I have bad news.
They're tuning in for your facts. They're tuning in for Ben's charm. And I'm not sure why I'm here. I'm here for the complimentary sodas.
I think they're tuning in to hear three guys get through the pandemic. I think that's basically the big draw. Speaking of which, we got pushed out on Tuesday by a very popular blog. The blog mentioned us, said this podcast is a lot of fun. Just to give you a sense of what we're normally dealing with here on the pod, we get about 60 downloads or listens when we push out a new podcast on Wednesday morning. From there, gentlemen, you guys don't know the numbers of what I'm dealing with here at headquarters, but pretty much it's 20, 22, etc., so that each podcast is getting us to around 120 listens. Great numbers, right? Our goal, as you may recall, was 1,000, which we've reached. So this is how last week went. Wednesday, 69 listens. Thursday, 35, then 22, then 21. Sunday, we're down to 20. Monday, 23. Tuesday, I check at 1 o'clock, and we're at 540. At 1:30, it's 680. At 2 o'clock, we're at 937, and I am like, "What is going on?" And I email Simplecast, and I said, and guys at Simplecast have been awesome. And I said, you've got some sort of weird aberration. And they emailed back and said, yeah, our engineers have looked at it. This is a legit spike. You've got a nice spike going. I'm like, no, I'm over 1,000. You don't understand. This isn't a spike. This is a problem. We had 1,727 downloads on Tuesday.
Wow.
Dude, they have a word for this. What's it? The name of the blog is Instapundit, and they call it an Instalanch, because if you get linked on it, you just get buried in interest. So we are very, very fortunate to be the recipients.
And so today we're up to 462. I don't know what's happening. Really nice guys over there at Instapundit to celebrate us. The comments, however, were not.
Never read the comments.
We're not.
That's an iron rule of internet life is don't.
It really is kind of true.
I just
like you can't even read the comments on like a band's board written by people who love the band, because they
Even worse. The more passionate people are, the worse the comments.
They hate the band that they love so much. You know, like.
Well, to give you a sense of Instapundit's audience, there are I think they are skewing older than 50-year-old white guys. They're very upset that we started in 69. So maybe we'll have to go back.
And that 49? That's awesome.
Maybe we'll have to go back and do some earlier years.
The Andrews sisters totally getting the shaft here on the pod. That's right.
The one that really sticks out to me, and if you'd like to go on iTunes and put down positive reviews, please do, because it was this gentleman who said, these guys are not funny, not interesting, and not informative. They are just scratchy, whiny wannabes with a horrible music selection.
What can you say? You know, sometimes they just get you.
Yeah, I was going to say, when does it get inaccurate?
The wannabe thing. Yeah, like I do want to. Am I a wannabe?
Yeah.
No, you're actually are. You're awesome.
You're a B. You're an actual B.
I want to be 15 pounds lighter. That's about it. All right.
You wish you were a baller. You wish you were a little bit taller.
Too short. Excellent. So it is 1993, and with this boost in our listens, it's really, Jeff Simons, kind of a whole new world for us.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous now. I don't know what to do. Oh, that was a cue. Oh, you were so clever. Oh, yeah, here.
It's the Grammy winner.
A Whole New World by Peebo Bryson and Regina Bell.
I've got a really bad feeling about this.
I can show you the world. Shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess,
who's singing this one?
Did you last let
one moment, sir.
Decide. I can open your eyes. Take you wonder by wonder.
I really like this movie. I don't like this song, but I did like the movie.
Sideways and under on a magic carpet ride. A whole new
It is Peebo Bryson. That's, you may remember him back in the Luther Vandross episode when we celebrated the new soul.
Oh, Tim, you must
80s.
Be really happy then. This went stroke in. You're liking this?
It's good. It's Tim's nice. It's nice to see soul music back in the charts.
Neo soul, right? Isn't that what you called it?
Who did he sing with? Peebo Bryson and who was it else?
Regina Bell singing the part of whatever her name is, Princess Jasmine.
Jasmine, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
You know, that movie's not aged well, my friend. I don't know if you remember, but she's 16 for no good reason. And also, I've actually used a piece of that in a cultural appropriations class really effectively. So I don't know if you've seen it recently, but it's not one of those ones that they're going to hang their hat on 20 years from now.
They made all sorts of changes for the live action version that came out last year with Will Smith as the genie. And the Plain family enjoyed that up and down.
Oh, you actually saw it?
Oh, yeah. In the
I just enjoyed Twitter's just ruthless takedown of Will Smith as the genie and never watched one second of it.
He was great. He was awesome. All right, let's move on. No more arguments.
Wait, is that the Grammy winner or the number one hit?
That was the Grammy winner.
Oh, I should have known that was the Grammy winner. Good Lord.
It has that syrupy keyboard. You can't win a Grammy unless it starts. Oh.
That's really amazing.
This is a number of years.
That's the same song as Wind Beneath My Wings again. It's it three is. Out of 4 years.
That's just Wind Beneath the Carpet.
All right. What was happening in 1993? It is Bill Clinton's first year as president. We've got a little situation that happens in Waco, Texas. If you want to go a deep dive down into cult land and learn about the Branch Davidians, you can find out all about what happened. Do you know how many people died at the Branch Davidian compound?
It's a lot. It's like 587 or something like that, right?
76. But it was
like 600 people.
It's still
really
a lot.
It's only 75 people. I thought it was like whole families. I thought it was like Jonestown level. It was only 76.
No, I mean, that's a lot of people in one compound.
I'm not disagreeing. Okay. It's a lot of people. I just thought it was an astonishing number of people.
Ben, would you like to enter in on what number constitutes a lot of
deaths?
Breakfast,
like, that's just nothing right there. I eat that much for breakfast.
I'm sorry, but COVID has recalibrated what a good number is.
In other bad news, we had the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993 with the truck bombs in the parking garage, and that was terrifying. Monica Seles.
Stabbed. Gets knifed in between games, right? Is that the U.S. Open where they stabbed her?
No, it was a tournament in Germany.
Okay.
Can you imagine that happening with Twitter now? Like the number of...
No, I can't actually.
I mean, in between matches, man comes out of the audience and stabs her in the shoulder. Ben Barton, do you remember why he did that?
No recollection. I remember the event really well, but I assume because he's super crazy. But
super crazy. Good. Jeff Simons?
Well, I assume because he was trying to impress a pretty gal, that why most of these events take place, but not
kinda.
The case.
That's pretty good, Jeff Simons. He was a huge Steffi Graf fan.
There it is.
But apparently not enough to believe in her. And so he felt he had to take out her number one competition.
You know what's amazing, too, is that would be the horrifying attack and athlete story of the 90s, except that it's just a warm-up.
Oh, I know.
For the delicious feast coming next year. I mean, oh my gosh.
I'm sorry, what happens next year?
Oh, come
on. First of all, we're hearing from our Olympics Bureau.
Right. Winter Olympics. Tanya's going to pipe what's your face?
God, that was next year. Crazy.
Yeah, man, I can't wait to talk about that.
Local girl for us Bostonians. Oh, that was so bizarre. Okay. Moving on, we have to get to our number one hit, Jeff Simons. We are trying to – last week we went an hour and 14 minutes. No, we're going to be under 50 this time. Let's go. It's the number one hit.
I Will Always Love You by Whitney Houston.
If I should stay, I would only be in your way, so I'll go, but I know I'll think of you every step of the way. And
keeping it under 50 minutes, we're going to pull it.
Wow.
Right there.
Although,
was that in the movie or that was just regular Whitney Houston?
Oh, no, what? From The Bodyguard.
That's The Bodyguard. Costner. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Costner, once again, riding the zeitgeist.
Did you see that movie, Jeff Simons?
Nope. I felt like the music video was the whole movie, so I didn't watch it. You saw that, really?
Oh, hell's yeah.
Really? Was it good?
No,
this is back.
Really,
this is when Ben would go to the movies by himself to a multiplex.
Oh,
and
totally.
Go to a 1, 3:45, 6, and 9:30 show on one ticket. We'd just come out, reload at the snacks, and just rip. Like, I remember that you did it a couple of times when you were living with me. You're like, I'm going to the movies. I'm like, okay. He's like, I'll see you tomorrow. And he meant it. He was like, gone at 1, back at 11. He'd seen 5 movies. He'd ate like 3 buckets of popcorn. It was incredible to watch.
So, yeah, there was a run from 1985 to basically 1996 for us. I mean, like, if it came out and it made money, I saw it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You saw the movie somewhere.
Yeah, totally.
If it made money, but not off of you.
Yeah, no, right.
You're not a sucker. Which version is better, Whitney's or Dolly's?
Oh, Dolly's by a mile.
Dolly's by a mile. I always thought this song was kind of a joke. Like, I mean, it's so over the top and ridiculous. I mean, she goes for the big, like, and when they, you know, they cut up to the higher key.
She gets
key
it.
And, well, of course she does. Yes. But it's kind of like watching. So I feel like that song's like watching somebody juggle. Like, look at that. That's some pretty good juggling, but I'm not moved by it. Now, I will say that we are the 997 millionth people to cue this song up on YouTube.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's going to have 1 billion listens by the end of the year. So I should probably not speak further about my dislike for this song.
I know we're trying to keep things tight, but what about juggling chainsaws? Are you in on that? Is that more exciting?
I like juggling. I like to watch juggling for about 11 seconds, and then I get everything I need out of juggling. It's one of those amazing skills where I'm like, I wish it had more function in real life, so I didn't imagine people just practicing for their 11-second chainsaw moment, you know? But, I mean, what the hell? Like, yeah, it's cool. But I'm also like, you know, I'm like, I watch it. I'm like, and that's juggling. You know, it could be chainsaws, cats. It's all the same. Like, look at all that stuff in the air. How about that?
As I recall, you feel the same way about the harmonica. You're not – the harmonica, you're done within about 5 seconds.
We'll get there. If we ever get to the year Blues Traveler has a big hit, we'll talk about the harmonica.
All right. I will bring that home. All right. Let's move on. We've got an invitation to cynicism competition, not an invitation to cynicism question. This is the year that Jurassic Park dominates the box office. And no one is more cynical than Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. So I would like to have a Jeff Goldblum impersonation competition. Who would like to go first?
I'm going to cede the ground to Jeff. Do it.
Well, which moment do you want? You pick the Jurassic Park moment and I'll do it.
Nature finds a way.
Well, yeah, that whole speech where he's like, your scientists, they spent so much time asking whether they could. They didn't ask themselves whether they should. And you've put it in a box and you're selling it. You're selling it. You're selling it. Well, you call progress. I call raising a natural worm.
All right. Nice job.
I would have also gone with must go faster, which is actually still my favorite line in that movie. Dinosaurs like object and mirror. I like that. I still like that. I just watched that movie last year with Will and it was great.
Oh, that's that movie's good.
That's a good movie.
Solid work. Better than the second one.
Oh, and then you and I saw the third one in Middlebury with that kid in front of us who kept screaming dinosaurs at the screen. That was like a creepy night. It was like going to the movies with like the Children of the Corn. That was so rough.
You're killing him.
It's because he hasn't thought about that moment until right now in 20 years, and it was
God, he's wiping the tears away.
It was so uncomfortable.
Right. We're cutting that, but you're right, I have not thought of that in 20 years.
Oh, so scary.
All right. The impossible question, gentlemen. Hold on, I'm still crying. I don't know if you know this, but I went through all of 1993's top albums on Rolling Stone. They have like 137. They've ranked them.
Wow.
Sadly, my pick did not make the ranking, which I'm still upset about. Here's who did. Vince Neil's solo album, Exposed. Did any of you partake
in that? The Rolling Stone best of the 93 list?
It came in like 137th, but...
That record sucks 100%.
I can't That's even ridiculous. Name a song on that record. No.
Did you actually listen to it, Jeff, or are you just assuming?
Oh, I'm sure I heard like 45 seconds of a single and was like, yep, that's what Motley Crue would sound like with the worst parts kept and the best parts left out. So,
well, it made me think, though, out of all those hair bands whose time is now up here in 1993, which lead singer had the biggest solo career and which lead singer do you think should have had the biggest solo career?
Depends on you. Do you count David Lee Roth? He's not a hair.
Yeah, I was going to say
so
Roth's
funny.
Out.
I don't count Van Halen.
Right, and you can't count Axl Rose either. So I mean, but right, those don't count as hair metal bands.
It's so funny. I think of David Lee Roth as one of them, but not Van Halen itself. But yeah. But let's toss him aside. Axl Rose doesn't do anything solo, anyways.
Chinese Democracy. Come on now.
I mean, I don't like that. I mean, yeah.
The short answer is that not like the it ends for all of those guys. That entire
it just
like,
ends.
It just totally ends.
Yeah.
None of the bands put out good records, let alone solo records. It just completely goes over the side of the cliff.
So Brett
the guy
Michaels
from Rat had a nice voice.
The guy from Rat, Brett Michaels from Poison had kind of a second life as one of those celebrity big brother type dudes.
Oh, a reality. And Vince Neil does too. I mean, yeah. A lot of these
does
guys
really?
Get recycled that way. Yeah, totally.
Oh, wow.
They all have porn tapes too, right? Both those.
Oh, you know who had the best, you know who had the best solo act is the drummer in Motley Crue.
Tommy Lee.
Yeah. He put out several records and sure married Pamela Anderson.
And meanwhile, the guy from Skid Row ended up on Gilmore Girls.
Is that
guy can sing too. Yeah. Sebastian Bach is a pretty smart guy too. Every time I see him interviewed, he's pretty witty and funny. And I didn't like Skid Row at all, but I like that guy.
Yeah.
And his post Skid Row, just man about town. He's a raconteur, that guy.
All right. Our three songs.
Okay. I think, I don't know, Tim and I agree, this was a hard year to choose. I had three selections, each one I just love.
And you want Jeff to give you a signal?
I'll just go through real briskly.
Okay.
The one that my daughters want, and it actually is probably currently my favorite song from this year, is Mary Jane's Last Dance, Tom Petty. The 16-year-old Ben Barton and 23-year-old Ben Barton felt very strongly that I should choose a song from Versus by Pearl Jam. And I have a later Pearl Jam one coming up, and I'll explain why that one's later then. But here's what I'll say about that. The song that I choose is a song about finding happiness and peace amongst chaos. And that's where I'm at now. I am not the angry person that loved Pearl Jam so much. So anybody who knew me in 1993, I wore this waffle Pearl Jam long sleeve shirt with a little bomb on it that said Pearl Jam on it, like almost every day. I started law school and I was just like Pearl Jam, Pearl Jam, Pearl Jam all the time. Anyone who stood still in front of me heard about it. and so I'm sad not to choose that. But later, this is a song that's come to mean a lot to me. I've listened to it many times in times of need. When I worked at a law firm after law school, it was a tough couple of years. I didn't really care for that work. My screensaver were the first four lines to this song just on loop. So like I would get up to go to the bathroom and come back and there it was waiting for me. When I came in the morning, it was waiting for me. Jeff, if you will hit us with A Cuff Rose by Uncle Tupelo.
Yeah. Such a great pick.
A Cuff Rose by Uncle Tupelo.
Pete Townsend triplet rhythm part in there.
So I'll talk about Uncle Tupelo and what they mean in a second, but that song in particular, 2 minutes, 36 seconds, verse, chorus, three chords in the entire song, open tune the guitar to G, and I think Jeff will definitely agree with this. If you love this kind of music, you're aware of how hard it is to write a good version of this song. It seems easy because it's so simple, but it's in fact the hardest thing. Like doing a fancy song with a million changes and a bunch of bridges and that stuff is actually a lot easier to do than to write a spectacular, unbelievable 2-minute folk song that just grabs you by the heart and just pulls you in. And that's why I love this one so much. The first verses and then the chorus, everything cuts against the tide when you're by my side. So the first one is like a love relationship one. The second one is Acuff Rose, and that's the old country music publishing thing.
Right.
And instead of everything cuts against the tide when you're by my side, it's when I hear that side. So the second verse and chorus are about music. And those two things in my life have always been what has saved me. That's like where I find my peace is with the right people, the right relationships, and with the right music. And so this song just speaks to me to no end. And song of the year wise, dudes, these guys create alt country. Like they found this. This is their fourth record. It's their first major label record. So first record's No Depression. And basically, there's two really, really famous guys in the band. There's Jay Farrar and Jeff Tweedy. And these are the guys who go on to found Sunvolt and Wilco, and basically found alt country. So the first record is No Depression, and it's a bizarre mix of stuff. It's got a Lead Belly cover, it's got a Carter Family cover, and it's got a bunch of like weird punk songs on it. They called it Minutemen or Husker Du meet Woody Guthrie. And that's actually a really good description of it.
It really is.
Then the second record, Still Feel Gone, they lean into the rock. And actually, that's actually my favorite Uncle Tupelo record. Like, it just shreds. At this point, they're doing the college radio thing. They're signed to Rockville Records. Jeff, how much did they get paid by Rockville Records for not one, not two, but three different records that they made for them?
I would guess less than $5,000.
Oh, dude, they got nothing.
Wow.
Nothing. Rockville Records gave them $12,000 for each one of these stupid records. That's what they paid for the studio. And then they never paid them any royalties. As far as I can tell, they put out like four other records. Dude, I mean, like these records sold. These were on the college radio type stuff.
Right.
They were really big.
Oh, they definitely sold 50,000 copies at least
no
of
doubt.
Anodyne.
Yeah, totally. Well, Anodyne's Sire, though.
Okay.
It's the March 16th.
But Still Feel Gone sold a lot.
Totally. And dude, the next one, March 16th and 20th, 1992, is for this type of record.
It's a medium hit, too. You're right.
Yeah. So they are from down south Illinois. And they're basically playing the club scene in St. Louis and Belleville, Illinois. And they're going back and forth and just trying to make it, trying to make it. They cut Stillfield Gone. It's not a hit. They're not getting paid. They go back to the record company. They're like, where's the money? And the record company's like, cut another record. So they take the money and they do this record called March 16th to 20th, 1992. Peter Buck, the guitarist of REM, is the producer on it. They live in Peter Buck's house in Athens, Georgia, and they cut just a straight up old fashioned Bob Dylan's first record, Woody Guthrie type record that's only country. And it's a like, it's actually a borderline hard listen, Jeff. Would you agree? Yeah.
Totally, so like, totally agree.
The earlier ones are a mix, but this one is just like a really up in your grill. And just to explain what kind of guys these guys were. So this is 1992. They've been told that they need to follow up on Stillfield Gone. Grunge is where they're going. Stillfield Gone is a terrific grunge record.
Uh-huh.
And they decline. They're like, oh, no, we're going to put out just a 1937 country record. Put that in your pipe. So they do that. They get signed because if you can sell 50,000 copies of a 1932 country record, you've got something going on. And they put out Anodyne, and this is their breakup record. Right. And so by this time, they hate each other. And in particular, Jay Farrar can't stand Tweedy.
It's actually more complicated than that, but keep going. I mean, so it's heartbreaking what happened.
Yeah.
Good. You could, like, I'd be curious to hear your version of the story. So they're basically a trio throughout this period. They bring another guy, multi-instrumentalist, they have other people to play with them, but it's Tweedy on bass, Farrar on guitar, and they're trading off songs. And it's a little bit like the Beatles, where the guy who sings is the guy who wrote it, like you can just tell immediately who wrote it. And so they're divvying it up all the way through. By the time they get to Anodyne, Tweedy's really kind of coming into his own. They get the bassist, who eventually becomes the bassist in Wilco and is now still playing with Tweedy. He was the guitar tech. Yeah, totally. And they get him on bass. Tweedy picks up the guitar, and they've got this like spectacular two-guitar attack. The record is really, really, really strong. And the rock numbers are great on it.
Yeah.
They break up, and it's a really ugly, hideous breakup. They get their big break. They play on Conan O'Brien. And the record company Sire says they want them to play the long cut, which is a Tweedy song. If you watch the video of Farrar, you can't see his face literally for 4.5 minutes. He's just got the hair combed over his face, and he's like, "Just get me out of this place." Wilco's first record is AM, and Trace is the first record by Sunvolt, and it's, in my opinion, just a rout for Sunvolt. I mean, that Sunvolt record is terrific, and AM is okay. AM is all of the guys from Uncle Tupelo except for Farrar. Farrar goes off. He gets the old drummer from Uncle Tupelo and does the Sunvolt thing. And then the roles just flip. Like every Wilco record after that is better than every Sunvolt record after that. And then Wilco just goes on to be, you know, sort of legendary.
Good stuff. Yeah, so, Jeff, what's your version of the relationship?
Well, Tweedy just assumes that he and Jay have worked everything out. Like, okay, he's going to sing his songs and I'll sing my songs. And this is what being in a band is like. You compromise and you find the middle ground and you don't love everything the other guy does. But, I mean, he's a punk rocker, right? Like, Tweedy's like Dee Boone and Mike Watt were the polar sides of the Minutemen. And they were best friends, but they also fought all the time. And they sounded different. And so when Farrar just turned to him, he's like, "I've hated your guts for 3 years and I never want to see you again." Tweedy did not feel that way. And he was like, "Wait, what? You hate my, like, this isn't
you,
just
you
like
hate me?
Differences in aesthetic." Like, and Farrar just walked away and never really spoke to him again. And I think it was for Tweedy, like just an earth shattering, like Tweedy is a glue guy. Like, look at his band. He's kept this 6-piece band together in its current incantation for 17 years without a personnel change. He built a loft in Chicago for them all to hang out in. He produces anybody who wants anything to do with him. Like, if you're a guy and he thinks you're even remotely good, he's like, "Yeah, come to the loft, I'll make your record." Like, the space is open for rent. Like, you, the three of us could go make a record at the loft if we had the money and the inclination. Like,
let's record a podcast there.
He is a, like, let's have a party, I'll bring the beer kind of guy. And he found himself in a band with a painfully introverted, tortured soul. And rock and roll is a communal event. And Wilco is a rock band. And And Farrar just didn't have it in him. He just didn't want to be in that kind of a artistic scenario. You know, I like Trace. I don't think it's as much of a route as everybody does. It felt like it in the moment because Trace felt like an artistic attempt and AM felt like guys who felt like they needed to make a record. But being there routes straightaways. And from then on in, Sunvolt sounds like a band trying to sound like Sunvolt. And it's heartbreaking. Like, they don't make good records. And I've seen Sunvolt live 3 times, and it's a sad, joyless affair. Like,
I can agree with that. I can attest that. That's sad. It's a bummer.
And I just, so like watching those two guys, like watching Jay Farrar, like just go into the underbrush and Tweety, like look up and look around and say, hey, I think I could make a community. And he has done so. Like, what 50-year-old rock and roll fan doesn't hold a candle for Wilco? Like,
they are
the band that could be our lives. Like, I mean, they've been making music our entire adult lives and trying really hard to make it consistently relevant. So,
but
I love this.
It's really funny. Like,
I love this choice. I love this record and this band. And absolutely,
Tweety's growth over the course of Uncle Tupelo and then over Wilco too is really breathtaking.
Amazing.
Like, right. Farrar, on the first record, all the best songs are the Farrar songs. And Tweety just keeps working at it. And by the time you get to Anodyne, and it's super cold for Farrar, but the long cut, the record company's not wrong. You're going to play on Conan O'Brien. That's the one to play for sure.
All the best songs are his on that record. We've been had. 15 Keys, not 15 Keys. What's the other sing-along song? Whatever. They're all great. But the other thing that's amazing about Anodyne is it was tracked 100% live, no overdubs.
Oh yeah, dude, I forgot to say that.
That's how they do their major label debut.
Dude.
No second takes, no overdubs, no cheating. There's a moment in Give Back the Key to My Heart when Ken Coomer makes such an unbelievable drum mistake. Like, it's like the kind of drum mistakes they left on songs in the 50s because they didn't have enough tape to do it again. Every time I listen to that record and hear that mistake, I imagine Ken Coomer somewhere like, you couldn't have given me another pass at that, man. I have to live with that mistake the rest of my life, you know?
Yeah, but no, I mean, and you can hear it in A Cuff Rose, the filigree, like how detailed the violin part is and then the mandolin part is and then the harmonies. One take, like freaking amazing.
Yeah. It's unbelievable you picked this song because I just played it for my D period American studies class yesterday. I've got a fiddler in my class. And so she's got no free periods because one of her free periods is taken up by just playing the fiddle. I'm like, oh, you know, Uncle Tupelo? She's like, no. I'm like, oh, let's play a song for you. And that was the song I chose.
If you get a chance,
read Tweety's book. Let's get there so we can get back or something like that. Let's go there so we can get back. And his description of Jay Farrar's breakup with him is just brutal. Like, they're in that shitty apartment where it's just filled with beer bottles and Tweety's just kind of taking it and just, he doesn't know what to say. He had no idea that Jay Farrar was that unhappy just being around him. And for someone who's got anxieties already, it wasn't really a healthy moment for Tweety to take.
I will say, I mean, in defense of Farrar, the story's been told by Tweety. We get the Tweety version of the story. I'm sure it's not easy. Everyone knows, like, the little brother, big brother relationship isn't easy when the little brother becomes taller than the big brother. Like, by the time the last record comes out, it must have been really, really hard on Farrar. And there's
Tweety's like a big, loud personality. It'd be like if a golden retriever never shut down. Like, I mean, Farrar was a quiet, introspective guy, and Tweety was like shaking everybody's hands and hug. I mean, like, the thing that really hits, like, there are people in my life who are annoyed by me just by my general extroversion, who I would prefer to be liked by. And like, the fact that I know there are people I like who don't like me because my personality annoys them is a very difficult thing to learn that you have to live with. And I feel like that plays out on this record. And so that record hits home particularly for me because I know there are Jay Farrars in my little music circle who can't stand my Jeff Tweety. And there's nothing I could do about it because I am Jeff Tweety. I am the guy who's like, hey, what's your name? Let me ask you 700 questions about you. And that's just, what are you going to do? You know, not everybody clicks.
They're song pairs. Like the long cut is about a relationship where you have to take your time and work it out. And in my opinion, that's definitely a song about this relationship. Mm, yeah. And the Farrar song is Chickamauga, where he compares this relationship to the bloodiest battle of the Civil War. You're like, oh, that's how you feel about it, huh?
Yeah, that's so rough.
So great.
All right, Jeff, hit us.
So, So Mary Jane's Last Dance was in my top five. And Eight Cuff Rose was in my top five.
All right.
And, so we're all on the same wavelength. But I am gonna go with Pearl Jam because this is the year. Like it's like you love a few bands more than you love everybody else. Like I'm a Who fan, like all the way to the bone. Nothing I can do about it. I am a Clash fan. All the way to the bone. There's nothing I can do about it. I fell for the Replacements and the Hooskers in the 80s like that. But the last band that I loved with just white hot fire intensity was Pearl Jam. And it was like Pearl Jam 1993 to 99, 2000. Like that band, that was my band. Like I was fascinated by everything they did. And it wasn't 10 that did it. Like I liked 10 when it came out. I thought all those songs were great. I thought Jeremy was especially terrific from that record, but I wasn't all the way into Freakdom. But I bought Verses on vinyl the day it came out when you could still do that. And it was like a last minute version. Didn't even have Verses on the cover. It was the one with just the sheep and it just said Pearl Jam.
Oh yeah. That's the one I had too.
Took it home, put it on. And it was my favorite record after about 25 seconds. Like that record starts with all the like warming up sound and the big change, the two crucial things happen. One, they get rid of the Led Zeppelin pandering. Like 10 has guitar tones that are stolen right off of Houses of the Holy to the point where they're distracting. And second, the drummer on the 10 record is very good, but he's not anything particularly special. And they switch drummers and this guy, Dave Abbruzzese comes and he behind the kit on Verses is explosive. He's spectacular. He takes everything to a new level. And this record was recorded right down the street from where I was living. And I saw them live on Halloween, October 1993, like and on the second night of the Verses tour. They started in the Bay Area and they played a warm-up show in Santa Cruz and they played the Greek Theater. And I was right in the front and it's one of the absolute greatest shows I've ever seen. They were just magnificent. And I went and I just fell for these guys like a ton of bricks. And the best song on the record and my all-time favorite Pearl Jam song. And it's a song I would rank, I mean, in my all-time top 20, this song's in the conversation on certain days. Like
top 20 is not that big a deal. Come on,
top five.
Okay,
top five
now we're
song.
Talking. Let's
You're talking go. To a guy that has 32,000 songs in his computer, Tim. Top five is rarefied air. It's the song "Rearview Mirror," and "Rearview Mirror" is everything I love about rock music. It starts quietly. It builds to an absolute jet engine. It's a band performance. It's got an unbelievable guitar riff. And the vocal is absolutely spectacular. It's just controlled rage until it completely blows apart at the end. And it's a song that hits all the things that matter to me, like long drives with nothing but your own thoughts, family history that demands reconciliation and reinvention. I just love this song. I love this record. And if there's a single song from the 90s, at least the first half of the 90s to put in a time capsule, I think it's this one. So
this is great. Joe is going to be very excited with you.
Joe is?
Yeah.
Well, then I've done my job.
Yep.
Rearview Mirror by Pearl Jam.
It was a beating, made me wild.
so great.
Yep. And it's like loose but tight and messy but focused.
And the drums, and man. The drums crush.
Although the vocals really, I mean, like, Ed here is like at the absolute top. We can't play it, but when he goes to that high rearview mirror and then they loop back in over the ending, it's so powerful. And like when you see them live, this they stretch out that middle part and it
flows. Yeah, I can't believe you didn't choose the live version.
Oh, it's so great. And Ben and I have seen Pearl Jam together so many times, and like in that 93 to 98 moment when they get to rearview mirror, like it would last somewhere between 6 and 10 minutes, depending on how on fire they were that night. And like floaty middle before it kicks back in is it's really genuinely transcendent. Just great song, great band, great. Still love awesome. It. I'm not as angry, but I'm angry again every time I hear it. Like it really does transport.
It brings
me.
You back.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I saw them at Chrysler Arena, the basketball arena at Michigan on that tour. And they were just absolutely ripshit. You couldn't believe how good they were. I'm completely with Jeff. Here's one thing that I think, and I'd be curious if Jeff agrees. I've had previous bands that I really loved. I really, really, really loved the Rolling Stones in high school. That was my band. And then I really, really, really loved Led Zeppelin. And then I loved the punk acts. I loved the Clash. They were not my age. They weren't my band. Pearl Jam just came right in that sweet spot. Like these guys spoke to me. Their experience spoke to me, like the anger, the entire vibe. Like I remember really vividly trying to get into the Smithereens because the rock radio in New York was like, here, like it's today's generation. This is the band. And I was like, well, I'll go buy this record. And I was like, the Smithereens. And I was like, it's really not very good, actually. And so I was hungry for that. I wanted that. And this was it. This was totally it. And dude, even more than the recorded stuff, seeing them live, you just couldn't believe how good they were. If I had chosen it, I would have chosen the Go Animal combo. That's my personal favorite from this record. Yeah. But you can't go wrong. I mean, it's a spectacular, beautiful, amazing artistic statement. So good.
I agree with that idea that they were our age, our sensibility. Like they weren't like U2. Like they, you know, beamed in from Dublin and like were otherworldly and playing in stadiums. Like Pearl Jam was like, remember they had the fight with Ticketmaster? Like you'd see them in totally bizarre places.
Oh yeah,
like,
we'll get there when I do my year. But also, the first band name was Mookie Blaylock.
I was just gonna say, how can you not love?
Made me so happy. I was like a huge NBA fan.
Yeah,
it's not just like all of the guys we sort of got to know. But Ahmet, the bassist, was just like such a hilarious character, super likable. He and Eddie were really into basketball and the Sonics and everything else. It was just great.
Yeah, my friend Will, who lives in Montana, met Ament on a plane home to Montana, where Ament is from. And he's like, you know, they're chatting, and they chat for like 2 hours before they get to like, what do you do? And he's just like, oh, I'm a musician. And was like, oh, you know, you like professionally full time? He's like, yeah, full time. This is 1995, right? And the bassist from Pearl Jam is like, yeah, full time, pretty much. I, you know, it's all I do. He's like, wow, that congratulations. You know, my brother's a musician. It's really hard to make a living. He's like, yeah, been doing pretty well. Never like just introduced him as Jeff. He had the furry hat on and everything. And like he told us a story later. We're like, I'm pretty sure I know who that was.
You know? It's amazing.
That is great. Well, you guys did well. And we are on brand tonight. We are 50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys. And we're in our groove right now in 1993. I am picking a band. Kevin Brown's going to be not surprised. I am picking a Boston band. A Boston band who I think at Fenway Park just played with Pearl Jam, or the lead singer Bill Janovich got up there and played a little Pearl Jam, and he was up there saying, can you believe this, a Boston kid playing Fenway Park? Never thought you'd see that, but when you're with Pearl Jam, you can do things like that. So Jeff Simons, I've got an incredible story to close out our night. But before we get there, could you play Buffalo Tom, Late at Night?
Late at Night by Buffalo Tom.
I close my door at night, but they get
Either of you guys like Buffalo Tom?
I do, but I actually, this is the record that pushed, that took me off the track. I loved Bird Brain. I bugged Ben to death with that Bird Brain record in college. And then I really liked Let Me Come Over. That's the one with Taillights Fade
and
Velvet Roof. And then I bought this record the day it came out and was so disappointed at how mid-tempo it was.
Oh, you don't like Soda Jerk?
It was okay. I'm looking. I kept Soda Jerk and Treehouse.
You got rid of this one though, didn't you? It took you a long time to find that puppy.
It did. It's because like I felt like they lost the kind of slightly out of control vibe that I liked so much about Uncle Tupelo that they were experimenting with. But I got nothing against Bill Janovitz. He wrote a great book, Ben, about Exile on Main Street. He's a Rolling Stones fanatic and a really good writer. But yeah, this record was this was the goodbye Buffalo Tom record for me.
Because there's more after this too, but yeah. You're right. This is 1993.
I saw them this year. I saw them with the Blind Pig in Ann Arbor.
Oh, look at that.
It must have been on this tour.
Wait, this year? Oh, 93. Sorry. Yeah. Great. They were probably great in 93.
They were good, yeah.
I saw them a bunch in 93. I was the style section editor of the Northeastern News. I was going to concerts all the time. My buddy Danny was bartending at the Linwood Grill. So he and I would listen to this album over and over again. This is the funny part of the story. After this album, it kind of falls apart for them. And they go on a big old artistic hiatus. I think they're dropped by their label. And it's all the way in 97 where I'm teaching in Las Vegas and my little sister calls me. And she's like, oh, guess who I saw last night? I'm like, who? She's like, we went and saw Buffalo Tom. I was like, oh, great. She's going to Providence College. They went to Lupo's and they saw Buffalo Tom. She's like, you're never going to believe it. I'm like, what? Well, he pulled me up on stage. I'm like, wait, Buffalo Tom, you went to see my band in Providence and you got to go on stage. Yeah. We danced together and stuff like that. It was really great. I'm like, oh. She's like, and then like, you know, there was this time where he put the guitar around like he undid his guitar and then he put it around me and then he was playing his guitar and I was like, excuse me, what is happening right now? And so my little sister's telling me this and I realized my little sister clearly has grown up if she's going to Buffalo Tom concert. 2 years later, I'm living in Hartford, Connecticut and Mike Devlin calls and he says, hey, guess who's playing at the Toad down in New Haven? I'm like, who? It's like Buffalo Tom, comeback tour. I'm like, I'm in, we're going to Buffalo Tom. Guys, it was the saddest. Like, they didn't sell out the Toad in New Haven. It's a sparse crowd. It's guys our age. That's it, but not a lot of us. And at one point, they come out for their one ovation song, and they look at each other like, and the lead singer, Bill Janovitz, just looks at his bassist. He's like, should we do one more? And the bassist is like, No. Yeah, it was so sad. And he's like, okay. And it was like, you realize the comeback ain't happening. And at the Toad, the backstage is a stairwell down to the basement. And so you kind of descend off the stage underneath. And meanwhile, Deb and I are about to leave. And I was like, let's go to the bathroom. I go downstairs to the bathroom. And I realize, like, oh, I'm parallel with backstage. I'm like, Mike, come with me. And we just walk in, and it's the three of them and their manager sitting there having a beer. I'm like, hey, guys, you got a second? Like, yeah, what's up? Like, well, a couple of years ago, my sister called me. So I recount the story of Bill Janovitz undoing his guitar and putting it around my sister. And the bassist is terrified. Like, he's like, oh, God, this is going to
go bad. Yeah, he thinks this is going to go bad. Not only the shitty gig, but this lunatic's going to kick Bill's ass.
No, for sure.
And so I was like, did you do that? And Bill Janovitz is like, yeah, rock and roll. You know, you want a beer? And that's how I buried the hatchet with Buffalo Tom.
That's a great story. I have a good Toad's Play story too. I played there with Rich Price and opened for Ziggy Marley. And Ziggy Marley's enormous bodyguard came up to Rich and said, only three rules tonight, and then you'll have a great set. Rule number one, don't talk to Ziggy. Rule number two, don't talk to Ziggy. Can you guess rule number three? Rich is like, I got it. So it was a real friendly vibe. We had a good old time.
Gentlemen, good stuff tonight. I will see you all next week.
Timmy, yeah. Well done, man.
All right, thanks, hang everyone. In there. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, if you're having as much fun as we are, leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a rating on Spotify, iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a shout. And then check us out on Twitter or at our Facebook page, 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.
Today is working for me. Do you believe that for yourself? Hey, I'm Pastor Julie, and I want to empower you through encouragement. Inviting you to my podcast, Big Truth Encouragement, where I unpack living a faith-filled life. I created my podcast for the ladies, but gentlemen, you'll gain something too. So I invite you to listen to Big Truth Encouragement on Electricast and any platform where you listen to your podcast.
Electricast.
Mile, are you ready to record our promo for season 2 of the Wanna Bet podcast?
David, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Miles, we're not here to quote lines from Airplane. We're here to tell people that season 2 starts August 18th.
But I like Airplane.
I know you do, but Wanna Bet is a sports betting podcast. Each week we bet $1,000 on the NFL teams and games that we love.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And last year you picked over 60% of your games correctly.
How'd you do?
We're not talking about that. We are telling people that they can find us every Friday. So no more movie quotes.
Roger, roger.
Electricast. Electricast.